Welcome to Career Tools. Today's podcast, What is Work Product? Part 1. The questions this cast answers are, what is work product? Why do I need to know what work product is? And what are the 6 building blocks of work product? If you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening.
One of the things I love about the content at our conferences is that it can help managers and professionals learn how to reduce conflict at work. We don't explicitly talk about it a lot, and the tools that we suggest and that we've tested can really help professionals to communicate more effectively with the people around them and manage more effectively, both in ways that can make conflict less likely to happen at work. We can't eliminate it completely, and we can help. If you'd like to learn some of this content in person and you're in the Denver area, or if you're willing to fly to Denver, then please join us October 3rd and 4th for an Effective Manager and Effective Communicator Conference in Denver. You can sign up online at manager-tools.com/training. Come see us in Denver.
Welcome back to Career Tools. Today, we have got, again, a special host, special co-host, I think, joining us on the program, Andrew Spillman. Welcome back, Andrew.
Hey, everyone. Hey, Sarah. Any excuse I get to talk to you is great.
For those of you that don't know, Andrew was recently a member of Manager Tools and part of our presenting team, so he knows well today's content. It's something we talk about often in our public conferences.
And before that, I used it for the better part of 13 years.
So. Yeah, as a customer, as a user of the guidance itself. Mm-hmm. So it's well known to Andrew. Hence, he's an expert and we have him on occasionally. Okay. So today we're discussing work product. And one of the areas in our conferences that we advise managers to give manager tools feedback on is work product. When we're talking about, just to extrapolate it out, behaviors are the words someone says, how they say them, facial expression, body language, and work product. And we've explained to our manager tools audience very thoroughly, very many times, what work product is, but we've never really explained it to this group of folks, the career tools audience. So that's what we're going to do today. This is going to be a two-parter. So in the series of the next two casts, this guidance is going to explain what work product is. Just in case you're getting, and we hope you're getting, manager tools feedback. And if you're not getting manager tools feedback, this will give you a framework under which to judge the feedback you're receiving and the work that you are engaging in to determine whether or not the work you're producing is, in fact, good enough.
Absolutely. Our outline for today is we're going to introduce the 7 areas, and then we're going to cover each of them individually. So those 7 areas are quality, quantity, accuracy, timeliness, documentation, safety concerns, and relationships.
All right, so the 7 areas. Now, to be clear though, work product only consists of 6 areas.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, we've added one for the Career Tools audience. The normal 6. The standard 6, I'm going to call them. Quality, quantity, accuracy, timeliness, documentation, and safety. We've added one for this audience. You guessed it, relationships.
If you've been listening for a while, you know that in almost every cast, we say your career is made up of results and relationships. Mm-hmm. Work product is really around the results part of that duo, mm-hmm. right? And so by breaking it down into some subparts, subcomponents, we usually are helping managers, but we also help you as either individual contributors or folks performing, specific tasks, see where improvements can be made in your performance. You know, the reason that we help managers with this and break this down for them is it stops feedback that might sound like, oh, you need to pull your socks up, mm-hmm. or oh, great job, right? Like this performance communication that isn't helpful.
No.
And doesn't really give you any actionable ways to perform better and do better. And so this is why this is, I think, so helpful for this audience is we've been talking to managers about this for so long, and it's helpful for the individual contributors or for people who are going throughout their career who hope to aspire to, you know, be successful and do well. They're not always going to get the feedback that we would hope they get from managers. But if they do, how much more helpful to have some context around it?
Yeah. And I mean, I love when a manager says to their folks, way to go above and beyond.
Mm-hmm.
But go above and beyond isn't a behavior. I mean, it's great. No. Thank you for giving me credit for something. I don't know what the thing was, but thank you for that. Or to your point, Andrew, it's things like you need to pull your socks up, which are even more, I'm going to call it hurtful in that instance, because we know you want to be better. We know you want to do more. And when a boss says, or when a manager says, you need to pull your socks up, you literally have no idea how. So by providing this type of information, or this type of clarity to our performance communication, it can change things, or change that communication, I should say, from things like, you need to pull your socks up, to instead, the standard for our team is 6 items a week. You're only averaging 5 items a week. The quality of your work is good, you're on time, and your documentation and accuracy are great. How can we help you get a little bit faster?
Yeah, it's so much more specific and helpful, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's important to note, though, what Sarah just did is not the manager tools feedback model. So it's not the way that we recommend managers address feedback. So because relationships are so important, we've added relationships to the list, as Sarah mentioned. And so if you're making an assessment of your own performance, or as we guide managers, when we talk to managers, we can't forget about relationships, right? We have to consider relationships, and we'll delve into this more when we get to this, but without relationships, results don't count.
Exactly. And we're going to go into this in a bit here, but without relationships, results start to be negatively impacted as well.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Even good results.
Even good results.
Even results you would think, oh, I'm producing, right? This is, you know, I'm meeting. It can actually be a little bit counterintuitive, but
it can
relationships
be.
Are so important.
Absolutely. Okay. So let's begin our conversation with the standards. Let's start with quality. The quality of work is fundamental in order to help us determine or define whether or not it's having a successful or a valuable impact on the organization. That is, without meeting established standards for work, any effort that goes into the production of that work is essentially pointless. So we'll use an analogy here. We're going to think of a table with 3 legs. Oh, tiny disclaimer. Our table is rectangular in shape with a rectangular top, and it's got 3 legs. Now, let's be clear. The top and 3 legs that do exist for that table could be the most beautiful, balanced, honed, gorgeous, meticulously crafted tabletop and 3 legs you've ever seen. But without a 4th leg, the table will not stand, which means that the effort that's gone into the tabletop and those 3, let's all agree, beautiful legs is completely wasted without a 4th leg. And the impact of not meeting that quality standard is grave in this case. Now it's just a bunch of useless wood, essentially.
Yeah. And I know, because I've interacted with a lot of the folks in our audience. So if you're new to our audience, you know, forgive me, but I know we have a lot of high Cs. Mm-hmm. High Cs referring to the DISC model, high D, high I, high S, and high C. We have high Cs who are saying, well, Sarah, you could have 3 legs towards the center in a triangular shape,
sure,
and that would hold up a rectangle. The legs are at the corners. Just go lean into the analogy.
Yeah, lean in.
Please.
Folks, splitting hairs out there.
I know. This is not to say, though, that all work has to be perfect.
Right,
right?
Exactly.
I mean, quality is, I would say, relative, right? Yeah. We want it to be relevant to the appropriate stage in the process. A first draft of a piece of work should only reach the quality standard of a first draft.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that's a big pitfall that a lot of managers and, you know, individual contributors fall into is they think, oh, you know, first draft is final and it's got to be of, you know, the final standard and every other iteration is always going to fall short of that. No, there are quality standards for a first draft, like for a table, right? And we would expect that a table that is the first draft of said table would have four, and maybe even their rough cuts, right? They're roughly sewn or roughly sawn. And we would expect them to be equal length, right? So the table's level. We would expect that the top be flat-ish,
yeah,
right? Maybe it hasn't gone through the planer. Maybe
yet.
It hasn't been sanded, right? But we would expect that, you know, the quality standard of that first draft has four legs and a top.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And again, not perfect yet, but we'll get to that.
Exactly. So the crux of it is, I'm going to say, we need to remember that we need to balance quality with resources on mm-hmm. top of all of this. Now, the concept of quality in a work product includes the effective use of one's time, financial resources, and effort that goes into the creation of this work. What that essentially means is delivering the highest quality possible within the constraints of the resources at hand, which may, in many cases, be limited or even limiting for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, going back to our analogy, a workbench in a garage does not need to be the same quality as the dining table in your house.
Yeah.
So another thing we have to think about in respect to this table, which is now in draft one, which is a little bit rough, is, okay, well, how pretty do we need this table to be? We got to consider what's its use. And we may even in the creation of the table itself, build it out of a poorer quality wood, probably finish it more roughly, won't spend nearly as long churning the legs into a fancy spindled pattern because, let's face it, it's going to be in the garage.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, in your own garage, if you want to have a fancy sanded, lacquered, you know, really nice workbench, fine, right? That's fine. But at
it's
work,
your garage.
It's your, right? But at work, they're not your resources.
Mm-mm.
You're using company resources. So it's important to meet quality standards without overshooting.
Yeah.
Being a good steward of company resources. So consuming unnecessary resources leads to inefficiency. And I mean, really defeating the purpose of quality in this work product conversation that we're having.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And something I found a little bit confusing, I find about that, Andrew, in terms of when people receive feedback on these types of things, right? They're like, oh my gosh, I went above and beyond. And managers fall into a habit of saying, oh, way to go above and beyond on this.
Yeah.
We start to think that because of, again, a manager's lack of clarity and feedback delivery, many of the things we do ought to be done above and beyond. But draft one often doesn't need to be done above and beyond. It depends what we're looking for, right? Above and beyond isn't always a good thing, which is super confusing. And I hate that that's true, but I mention it because for our listeners who are regular listeners, you'll remember a recent podcast released on Career Tools, when to go above and beyond. So what that means is if you didn't listen to that one, you may want to search on the website, look for when to go above and beyond, and it'll help with that.
Yeah. I was also thinking, Sarah, about another podcast that this podcast really dovetails well with, and that is how to deal with vague feedback.
Yeah,
we have a podcast on dealing with vague feedback. And this is great to understand the framework of good feedback, right? Because it can be challenging and it can be, you know, frustrating when you don't have actionable or specific information.
Right.
Or like you were just alluding to, maybe I'm getting negative feedback because I spent so much time on something to go above and beyond, quote unquote.
Which is super unclear and not helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I did something that I thought was good, right?
Exactly.
And so understanding the different components, I think, helps understand kind of the levers in what we're talking about. And that your manager is also struggling with how to balance those things and give you the right performance communication. And spoiler, they're not going to get it right every time.
They're not. No. And also, it feels a little bit, Andrew, I don't know, maybe this is just me that feels this way. It feels a little bit like we're here talking to the directs of the world and we're like somehow disparaging all of those managers. Folks, if that's how this is sounding, that's not how we mean it to come across. Know that oftentimes managers aren't given the right tools. The tools to do their jobs, the tools to help you do your job as well. I mean, there's a lot of factors that lead to this ineffectiveness, but together we can make it better.
And I mean, really, that's why manager tools exist. We care about not just managers, but those in their charge.
Yeah.
And I used to tell people at conferences all the time, I love helping managers, but more importantly, I think, I know what it's like to have a bad manager, and I know everybody has. And if we can help with that and give managers the tools so that their employees don't go home and say that their boss is the bane of their existence, that might be our small way of making the world a better place.
Yeah. Small way. We do what we do. All right. Back to our discussions around quality. Okay. So another significant attribute of quality work product is our consistency. That is, a work product can only be deemed high quality when its standards are maintained consistently over time. Now, folks, you know this one instinctively. I mean, when I say to you, talking about brands, I'm going to say brands at grocery stores, it's common that we tend to choose a brand and stick with that brand.
Mm-hmm.
And we do it because I know exactly how this can of soup tastes. It tastes like every other can of soup I've ever purchased from this manufacturer of this type. It's why we migrate to brands. And it's similar in this kind of vein, right? If there's a brand of cookies that you buy and it's kind of hit or miss, you're going to change the brand and you're going to find one that's consistent, that's not going to be completely different with every newly opened package. And the same is true of your work. If your work is hit or miss in terms of quality, your colleagues are going to stop coming to you and your boss is going to start giving you negative feedback because people seek that predictability, especially when you're in a pinch, especially when things are tight, especially when it's like, ooh, I really need help. This is like a thing that's really important. You're going to give it to the person that is the individual who has got proven consistency in their quality.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say the last thing that we need to kind of talk through is for work product to really embody quality, it has to be complete and, as we were kind of mentioning earlier, relevant. So it's got to meet all the requirements, answer all the questions, you know, fulfill its intended purpose, and also be relevant to the matter at hand, right? So no matter how well executed, detailed, or complete something a product of work would be, if it's not relevant or, you know, meeting the present needs or is within the context of the, you know, project or the specific task or whatever it may be, it loses its value.
Yeah.
Right? A quality work product is not just about meeting a standard or, as we were kind of mentioning around being efficient with resources, it's about being thorough, purposeful, and most importantly, relevant to what needs to be produced or done.
Yeah, exactly. All right. I feel like we've sufficiently explained quality. Let's go on to quantity. So amount of. The concept of quantity is an equally crucial component when it comes to evaluating one's work product. You can't just focus on the quality of the work. It's essential to also meet the predefined standards for the amount of work to be accomplished. And this, ensuring that that amount is there, ensures that goals are met efficiently, contributing to the overall progress of any project or task.
Oh, absolutely. For every piece of work that we do, I think it's important to understand there's a diminishing return. The first 20% of the work we do contributes 80% of the quality, right? This is the Pareto principle. Mm-hmm. We've talked about this a lot. After that, every additional hour that we put in produces a smaller increase in quality. And at some point, we're not really adding anything worthwhile to the piece of work and we should stop. And this is where we need to learn kind of where that point is to balance quality and quantity to ensure that we meet both standards. Because we might be moving forward towards, you know, creating the next one.
Mm-hmm.
If we understand we've met that quality standard that we just talked about, right? So we can focus on that quantity if we understand kind of what the standard is for quality that we discussed and then focus on we've got to keep moving towards the next one as well.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You're absolutely right. And this kind of speaks a little bit to efficiency, right?
Yeah.
That principle of efficiency. It's about efficiently using the given time frame to deliver the maximum amount of work without compromising on the standard set for the quality itself. So this calls on your ability to effectively manage your time, strategic planning, as well as taking a structured approach to the tasks at hand. It's a synergy of both quality and quantity that really defines whether or not a work product is effective.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And don't let all the E words confuse you. It's about efficiently using the time frame, but when you have quality and quantity hand in hand, it's effectiveness.
Yeah. Effectiveness being it achieves the desired result.
Exactly. Have you heard all this buzz about the Manager Tools Executive Speaker Series, but you're thinking to yourself, nah, I mean, it sounds a little too high level. I'm not yet an executive. I'm just a manager. Maybe this doesn't apply to me. If you're at all curious about whether or not the Executive Speaker Series will bring value to you personally, send us an email at customerservice@manager-tools.com. We'd be happy to talk to you about your particular occupation, what it is that you specifically do in your role, in order to help you identify whether or not the Executive Speaker Series is right for you. Shoot us a mail. We can't wait to hear from you.
Our next component is accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
Accuracy is related to quality. There's definitely some relation to quality there. I would say accuracy is a subset of quality, which is specific to exactness.
Mm-hmm.
Accurate work is work that is error-free.
Yeah.
Right? It has a high degree of precision and meticulousness in execution, right? It signifies that the information provided is correct, is right, is reliable to a degree.
Yeah, it's a signaling effect, essentially, for things to come.
Absolutely. And we've done this. I've done this as part of the presenting team. Sarah, you do this all the time. When we go through decks We're looking for accuracy to make sure that the deck that we present in front of a group is going to be accurate. Not for us.
No, we, I know what it's
we know the material. We know everything, right? What it is we want to ensure that there's a high degree of accuracy, because if there's a mistake, if there's an error, then it calls into question everything.
Yeah.
Right. And we need to make sure that everything is 100% accurate so that it can be of the utmost credibility when it comes to the audience. And that's the consumer of whatever your product is. For us, it's the decks, it's what's in front of the group, but it could be anything that you're working on, right? If you prepare a report, the accuracy of that report, of every line, of every detail, just further solidifies that the entire report is accurate, right?
Yeah.
Every point of accuracy builds upon the last one.
I think, Andrew, the most real life example I've got, I think that stands out for most career professionals is spelling errors in resumes.
100%.
Don't seem like a big deal, but it's a signaling effect. I mean, if you're reading a resume and there's a spelling error, it's representative of an individual who hasn't put thought, time, detail, energy into this. And therefore, I predict that since you don't have an accurate resume, you're going to inaccurately complete work while or if you work here.
Or you have put forth that effort and all of that.
Yeah.
And you still miss things.
Exactly. Oh my gosh, I didn't even think of that. Yeah, it's that. It's anybody who's listening to this, who's ever looked through resumes, knows the first thing you learn naturally, it just accidentally happens, when you're looking at resumes is, if you got a bunch of them, start weeding out by spelling error. Every time you see a spelling error, throw it in the nose. Because it's an easy way to filter through them. And if you see an error in a resume, you can be skeptical about the content of it as well, generally.
Oh, absolutely. For a lot of professionals applying to things, this resume is the only piece of quote-unquote work product that the people hiring you are ever going to see before they hire you.
Yeah.
It ought to be the best representation of your work. And if it's not, then it calls into question a lot of things. Are you placing the right amount of, importance on this document? I mean, yeah, it's a great example.
Yeah. Okay. So now we don't want to confuse you, dear listener. That is, we were talking earlier about the fact that accuracy doesn't imply that each and every piece of work be perfect from the beginning. The process of creating any work product often involves several drafts, multiple iterations before reaching the final polished version. And hence, the degree of accuracy expected is also relative to the stage of the work. When we're talking the copy of the resume once submitted, we're talking final copy. Yeah. But initial drafts can contain errors, which are then identified and corrected in subsequent versions. So when we talk about accuracy, it doesn't necessarily mean perfection at every single step. Rather, the level of correctness and precision suitable for the current phase of work. And it's a progression. It's a progression toward increasing accuracy with each iteration, resulting in a final work product that is both high in quality as well as free of errors.
Absolutely. But hopefully this doesn't muddy the waters too much. But that means that your manager, and I tell managers this all the time, you could get feedback that is positive for having inaccuracies in your work. I know people are like, wait, what? What are you saying?
Yeah.
Because I would rather you get it to me.
Yeah.
Meeting a deadline, as we're going to talk about in just a minute, or, sufficing other criteria and missing that type of stuff if it's the first draft, right? To me, there are other things that are more important than you catching a spelling error.
Yeah.
If it's the first draft. And it's almost that that is evidence that you clearly understood this had to be to me by 5 p.m. today.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where you rushed through some things and got it to me by 5 p.m.
That's such a good example, Andrew. I think there may be many people who are listening to this podcast right now that can remember, I'm going to say, getting negative feedback for,
mm-hmm.
getting corrected by their boss for providing work later than the boss wanted it, but at a higher quality than the boss wanted it. One of the things I often talk to managers about is if you have an individual who's prone to over completion, over accuracy for drafts, say to them, I'm looking for no more than 3 paragraphs about X, so that they don't create for you a novel of things that is in turn unhelpful. So yeah, it's that. It's kind of it's a bit of a balancing kind of act.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's kind of why it occurs. To Andrew's point, sometimes we want it quick and dirty. I don't need it perfect. I need it fast. Yeah.
And I think great bosses not only pick, but communicate that pick.
Yeah.
Right? They communicate that choice. They say, like you said, I would rather it come to me on time, mm-hmm. right? With errors. Or they'll say, hey, take as long as you need or tell me how long you need because it's got to be, I want to be able to forward it to my boss right away, right? But bosses who communicate, you know, those choices of all the components that we're talking about, I think do really well. And that's not who we're talking to.
Yeah, I know.
We're talking to, now everyone here has a boss as well, right? Like everyone has a boss, even managers have bosses, right? But
mm-hmm.
those that we're talking to now, this, I think, understanding these different components or parts of work product, I think really helps maybe shape some of those conversations.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Being able to ask those questions.
Yeah. If you're unsure, you can ask. How much are you looking for? Or by when do you need it? Ooh, that's going to mean I'm going to have to make it imperfect. Is that okay? Those are perfectly valid questions to ask.
Yeah, great. And if you get the answer, I want it early. I want it with no errors. I want it, you know, if you get that answer of like, no, I want everything, right?
Yeah.
Then you have a good, at least a better understanding of the boss you're working for. And what they're looking for.
At least you know. That's all for this week, folks. Join us again next week for a continuation of the topic.